Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 421. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are these three other guys. How you doing there, James?
I'm somewhat surprised that we're being introduced in this fashion. So
I want to mix it up.
We mix it up plenty in other parts of the show.
Jesus, John, James. How was your weekend?
Oh, it was fantastic, Johnny. Thank you for asking. James, yeah? I don't know what your problem is with this. It's just, I think it's great.
John, just you get mad at me when I do this during Now Playing. Or during.
Just trying to be casual and friendly.
Yep.
Guillaume, what's up, buddy?
I like this attempt to keep us on our toes. Keeps us, on our guards and not playing 3DS while doing this.
I'm trying, buddy.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
I gotta subvert the group dynamic as much
radio,
as possible.
Radio free GP legend.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, we have a Nintendo podcast for you this week, as we do every week, and we're going to be doing some listener mail later in the show. We got some really good questions lined up. I'm excited to talk about those, but I'm also excited to tell you about some games that we've all been playing. And I'm going to go first this week. I played a new 3DS release. I'm not totally positive on how to pronounce this game, but I assume that it's Prown Plus.
Now, who's playing the game's name for, like, kindergarten babies or something? You know, Prown. When I was playing Black or, what was it? It'll Do?
It'll Do, yeah. I don't, mm-hmm. Prown Plus just sounds like nonsense to me. I don't know what that is supposed to mean. It doesn't seem to have anything to do with the game that I can tell. But I think this is a foreign developed game. I'm not sure. But anyway, it's a new thing on the 3DS eShop. It's an independent game, I believe, made by a small team. And it has previously been available on iPhones and maybe Android. But it's the kind of thing that I think fits much better to the 3DS and having physical controls. Prown Plus is kind of a racing time attack sort of game. It's a little hard to describe because it's intentionally abstract, but it's a game where you're controlling a ball that's rolling along this cord. This cord has like a thickness to it, and you control the game. The ball rolls forward automatically into the screen, which, you know, kind of sets it up for a really nice use of the 3D effect on 3DS, and it really does look nice. And the way you play the game is using the circle pad or tilt controls, which I think tilt seems like it would be terrible, but just because you can roll this ball left or right all the way around the edge of this cord. And you do this to avoid obstacles because this cord is basically your track. And you can't, there's no lanes or anything. You can't like dodge other racers or anything like that. You just go right through them. They're like ghosts.
Spooky.
But the way that you, the skill comes into the fact that there are obstacles that basically lie tangent to this cord. So as various times as you're going through the track, there'll be all these different shaped objects that are large enough that they touch one side of the cord. And so before you get to those, you want to move to the other side so that you don't run into them. And a lot of times these are placed in series so that you're kind of juking back and forth to try to alternate and get in between them. If you think about like a corridor in Star Fox where they have these, you know, these big obstructions that you kind of have to go under and then over and then left and then right. It's similar to that idea, except it's all based around rolling around the edges of this line that's traveling through the thing. So you have less control in the sense that you don't have to move around spatially. You're only rotating around this thing, but the game moves fast enough and it gets faster and faster as you go. And there's multiple speed settings. So it's still, even though it's very simple to control, it is hard to keep up with. and the cord is, this track that you're on, I really should call it a track, even though it's much more one-dimensional than that. But the track, it bends and curves all throughout 3D space as you go through this level. And so sometimes, depending on which side of the track that your ball is on, you may or may not have a good view of what's ahead. And so you kind of want to take that into account as well, because if you can't see the obstacle coming, you probably can't dodge it effectively. And they do a really smart thing where the more that you spin around the track, the act of spinning, of rotating around the track to dodge things slows you down. It doesn't slow you down as much as actually hitting something, because that will stop you in your tracks and it really hurts your time. But you don't want to be spinning around this thing constantly, because it'll slow you down too much and it'll give you a bad time on the track. So you basically, what you want to do is move only enough to dodge the things and no more. And of course, you know, there's no way to do that perfectly, because there's enough slop built into it that you, it ends up, that's sort of the differentiator between someone who's just good enough to finish the track and maybe get first place, and someone who's really, really insanely good and who's going to set a really high, a really low time, on the online leaderboards. Basically, how efficiently do you use your spinning around this track to get through these obstacles? It's very challenging. But it's fun, and the graphics are really nice. It's a lot of just kind of abstract shapes and really weird colors and things like that. It's not entirely psychedelic. It's certainly not Dyad on PS3, which is like one of the most eye blistering things I've ever seen. I mean, it looks a little bit like that in very broad strokes, but it's certainly not that fast or that crazy looking. But it's fast, and it's fairly crazy looking. And, you know, I haven't played anything like this on 3DS, so I enjoy it. I think if you are a fan of F-Zero and you miss those games, and there's a good bit of F-Zero in this, just in the silkiness of it, the smoothness of moving around the track, and the very three-dimensional. Especially, you remember like in F-Zero GX, there was like the big blue version on that game was basically like you were like racing along the outside of a tube.
Yep, you know? Right. Yep.
So you're dodging things, but it is very much like that, just stripped down just a little bit, but very, very similar feeling. And so I've enjoyed that aspect of it. And also, it has a really cool soundtrack, which is actually what initially got me interested in it, because the Nintendo press release from last week for the downloads mentioned that it has a jazz rock soundtrack. And that's not a term that you see thrown around very much in the context of video game music. And as people who listen to my other podcast, Discover Music Project, will know from a lot of my selections over the years over there, a lot of the music that I really like could be described as jazz rock, although that's a very broad brush to paint with. But anyway, so I just saw those words and I kind of mused on Twitter, oh, this kind of makes me interested in this game. And the developers got back to me and said, yeah, we'd love to hear what you think of it. So I was like, okay, I'll buy it.
Guilted into purchase.
I'm so easy. It's like $5, you know, and the reviews were good. I mean, Don Koopman reviewed it, King of eShop, Don Koopman. He liked it, and he plays enough stuff on the eShop to know what's good and what's not. So he gave it a solid score, and I'd seen some other things that recommended it. I also watched some video, and I thought, wow, that really does look very cool and very interesting. So I've enjoyed it quite a bit so far. And I think, you know, for a cheap 3DS eShop thing, again, if you've got a new 3DS, it's a very nice use of that, because this is a game, because it's a Twitch game, and it's really, really fast paced, and it requires a lot of precision from you in order to perform at the highest levels. If you're playing and you lose the 3D effect, that could actually be really bad for your ability to play the game. So I think having the super stable 3D probably is a nice benefit to playing this. And it's just a good showcase for that effect.
That kind of reminds me of this DSiWare game, which also got an eShop sequel on the 3DS, AI Race or Air Race. Mm-hmm. Have you ever played that? Like you're controlling this plane basically with large wings. And you can pilot it basically up, down, left, right. You can control the roll as well with the triggers. And you're just going through these tunnels with various obstacles. And it's basically like, you know, it keeps going faster and faster. And it's basically like the Death Star run in the third movie. And by third, I mean Return of the Jedi.
Right.
Where they go through the actual thing. And they're just going through these small tunnels. And there's these obstacles that keep coming up. So yeah, like it just reminds me of that, just in the way that, well, it's going faster and faster, and it's getting harder and harder to avoid these obstacles. But there's no enemies to shoot down. There's no, like, it's kind of a racing game, but you're racing against time.
Yeah, you're not wrong. That it's a good comparison. I've only played the 3DS demo of Air Race. There were some on DSiWare and some on 3DS.
Right.
Those games seemed fine to me, but the demo didn't like blow my mind or anything, so I didn't right. end up buying that one. But Proun Plus, Proun plus sign. Pro, I thought like Proun, Proun, Prune? No.
Prune,
it must be
maybe.
Proun Plus, but I just don't know what the hell that's supposed to mean. But I didn't actually say what I thought of the music, which is what originally drew me to it. I like the music pretty well, and it really does sound different than what you hear in most games. I would say it leans towards like lounge jazz probably. So a lot of the tracks sound like Henry Mancini type stuff. If you think of like the James Bond theme, that's a pretty good reference point, or something that you might hear in a 60s or 70s movie, you know, for like a nightclub, the kind of stuff they would be playing there. So it's not what I would normally listen to, but it is nice. I mean, it's nice to hear saxophones. There's a lot of basically jazz guitar on these tracks, and they're all pretty light, but it's nice, and it is distinct, especially for video game music. I've never heard anything that quite sounds like this. So I think it's a pretty good compliment to the weird, colorful visuals and everything. So anyway, I don't know what else there is to say about Proun Plus. It's a pretty simple game, but it kind of fits the bill. I think it fills a niche there on 3DS, and I'm enjoying it. And then maybe more interesting to a lot of our listeners, even though it's not on a Nintendo platform, is a game called Axiom Verge. That I got an early review code for. This is on PS4. It's also going to be coming to PC, I think, in the early summer. And maybe one day to Wii U, but probably not anytime soon. We can talk about that a little bit more later. But Axiom Verge is a game made by this guy named Thomas Happ. He's worked on it for the past 5 years, just him. He did, I think, literally everything in the game. I haven't seen the credits yet, but as far as I understand it, he did basically everything, the art, the music, game design, story writing, everything. And it is Metroid. It is a very loving tribute to Metroid. Most specifically, I would say Super Metroid. Although the graphical style, in some ways, looks a little bit more like a Genesis game than a Super Nintendo game, just because it has a fairly muted color palette. There's something about it that looks a little bit more like a Genesis game to me than Super Nintendo, but it plays exactly like Super Metroid, and you can tell that Tom has been a humongous Super Metroid fan for a very long time and really understands what makes that game tick and what makes it great. And he's not just copying it here. He's not just doing all the same things. He's basically taking everything that you might learn from really studying Super Metroid, making his own thing, and even advancing a lot of the ideas that you see in Super Metroid. So I would liken this to, I think this is going to end up being 2015's Shovel Knight, you know, in the sense that it's very much a retro-inspired game, but it's also a modern game, and it takes into account everything that we now know about those older style games in the modern context, and it adds a few little tweaks, and it does some things that they definitely would not have done and could not have done back then, both in terms of design and in terms of technology, what was available. So it feels very much like Super Metroid, but it also does some things that you just would never see in Super Metroid. And the thing that has excited me the most about it, I think, is just that it immediately feels familiar. And that's kind of part one of the formula. You have to nail is that, yes, this feels like the thing that I want it to feel like. And that's you've grabbed me right there, because this already compares very favorably to something that I love. But then the other part of it, and this is where you can easily drop the ball, and Axiom Verge doesn't. Axiom Verge blows it out of the water, is that it continuously throws wrinkles at you and unexpected little things. And it never just repeats the games that you have in your head when you're playing it. It knows that those things are in your head, and it subverts those things. And the exciting thing about it is it's a huge sprawling game. I think it's much bigger than Super Metroid and longer, which is great. And And I can only talk about the very beginning of the game, and I really don't even want to get into like too many specifics on that because those are still fun to discover for yourself. But in general, I would say that the upgrades it gives you are not things that you would guess at necessarily. And a lot of times when I first get them, I'm not even really sure how they would be useful, which is really exciting because, you know, as a Metroid fan, what you want is when you get a new ability, you want it to be something that you have to learn to use. You want it to be something that can give you access to a lot of different options, something that you can use both in combat and in exploration and in puzzle solving, something that it's not necessarily super obvious where you have to go apply that thing, but rather it's something that you want to experiment with. And maybe some people will get so good with it that they can get to like really, really secret, hard to reach places, whereas most people will kind of only get maybe the basic level of it. Like there's some depth to these ideas and they're given in an order that you really can't predict. And, you know, like in some of the later Metroid games, it gets a little bit disappointing in the sense that you can start to feel where it's like, okay, they're going to have to give me the high jump now because basically all the places that I want to go, I can't get to because I don't have a high jump.
Yep.
And then lo and behold, that's the next thing you get. Yeah. You know, like there's a certain rhythm to the way those things are rolled out that Axiom Verge isn't tied down to. And the way that it hands these abilities to you as you progress through the game is completely unpredictable. Because we've never played this game before, and it's not beholden to any franchise standards, and so it's so fresh and exciting every time you get something.
In some of the later Metroid games, it almost felt like it was on rails to a certain degree. Like, okay, well, here's the point in a Metroid game where you get this. Here's the point in a Metroid game where you get that.
You kind of know that Screw Attack is going to be the last major thing that you get because it's so powerful that they can't really do much after that except just take you to the final boss.
Yep. So how far have you played into this?
I'm about halfway through it right now.
Okay. And it feels bigger than Super Metroid? Quantifiably bigger than Super Metroid?
I've only seen half the map, but that has taken me over 6 hours.
Yeah.
Yep. And the half of the map that I've seen so far is about as big as Super Metroid.
Is there anything ability-wise that lets you find, hidden stuff or anything like that?
Not that I've seen so far, but if there was, I probably couldn't tell you because it would... So I am under embargo past a certain point that's fairly early in the game. And because I didn't know about that embargo until I was already past that point, I'm not even like super clear on the details of what came before that and what came after. So I don't want to get into trouble by throwing something out there that I think is okay, but if I later find out it wasn't.
All right.
Just
grunt once for yes, two for no. All right, here we go.
I can say that at some point I suspect that there might be something similar to an X-ray scope.
Yeah.
You don't have to put that in these games. I mean, you know, Fusion doesn't have that. Zero Mission doesn't have that. It's possible to make a good 2D Metroid without something like the X-ray scope, but there may be other ways to get basically the same effect. And I could see this game going with something like that, but maybe it won't. I'm not sure. But if the question is, are there lots of secrets? Yeah. Yes. Lots of secrets.
Yeah.
And some of them are hidden in ways that really are unique to Axiom Verge. I mean, some of them are really fun to find and really exciting when you find them because you did something that you can't even do. Like you wouldn't even think of, you couldn't imagine doing in a Super Metroid game because you're using a combination of abilities that just don't exist in the Metroid universe. And that stuff's really exciting.
Is there anything that it does, like, because this is on PS4, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything that it does with PSN or anything interesting kind of like with anything online? Like, I know it doesn't have online multiplayer or anything like that, but is there anything sort of like...
Not that I've seen. I mean, it could come later, but I doubt it. I think it's you know, meant to be a single-player game. But I will say it does some things with the hardware that you definitely could not do on Super Nintendo. And in fact, I'm not even sure you could do on 3DS. Mm-hmm. So if this ever came to one of our platforms, it would have to be Wii U. I'm sure it could run on Wii U, just in terms of basic specs.
Yeah.
But it definitely is not strictly a 16-bit game in the way that Shovel Knight is not strictly an 8-bit game. You know, for instance, Shovel Knight runs in widescreen.
Yep.
And so does this. Yeah. But this also does some things with particle effects that, I mean, there's no way in hell you could ever do it on Super Nintendo. And when it happens, you're like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. So it's, in that way, it's probably closer to Symphony of the Night, you know, and some of the crazy, you know, at the time, like really futuristic looking, you know, polygon. I don't know if I've seen polygons yet or not, but, you know, Symphony of the Night has just a lot of really crazy boss enemies, for instance, that were so complicated and had like so many moving parts. There's no way you could ever do that on a 16-bit system. And Axiom Verge definitely has a few things along that line. Mm-hmm. There's a few other things I could be more specific about, but again, I'm not totally sure that I'm allowed to, so I don't want to risk it. But anyway, overall, I'm unbelievably happy with it so far. I can say that. And I think if, like me, you are a really, really big Metroid fan and you love that series to death, this is the game that you've been wanting Nintendo to make for a long time. And it's pretty amazing that not only did Nintendo not make it, but one dude made it, one very talented, very dedicated guy. And, you know, I hope it's not another 5 years before we see this guy's next game. But he's going to get famous from this game. He's going to win awards. It's going to be a game that's talked about for the rest of the year. And I think I've met the guy, and he's adorable, and he's very humble, and I think he's probably not prepared for the reaction that he's going to get from people, because he has made what is, for me, like kind of a dream game. And the fun part about playing through this is that I get the sense that he made exactly what his dream game is, and his dream game and my dream game are basically the same thing. So I feel really simpatico with this guy as I'm playing through his game, because I know this one dude, this all comes from his head. And I'm like, dude, you and I are totally on the same wavelength. And it's so exciting for me to play through something like this that's made by someone who deeply understands why we love this kind of thing, and knows that it's not enough to just do that same thing over again, that you have to apply it in a new direction and do new and fun and surprising things with it. And he just nails it so hard. So
how's the music?
Oh my gosh. The soundtrack I would probably describe as, it sounds like a 16-bit version of the Metroid Prime soundtrack.
Okay. Cool.
So it's a little more techno, and at times has some kind of vocal samples and things like that that you might associate more with Metroid Prime, but it's downsampled to sound more like something that you'd hear out of a Super Nintendo.
Cool.
Yeah, it's insanely cool. Yeah, and it fits the graphical style really, really well.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm thrilled about it, man. I can't wait for everybody to play this and be talking about it. There's so much that I want to like talk to people about, but I really can't right now, and it's kind of driving me crazy. But I'm absolutely thrilled about it. And as for Wii U, I mean, we've asked them about this stuff before, and they've talked about it. Tom would love. I mean, of course, he would love for this to be on Nintendo system. It is basically a Nintendo game. This game comes from his love of a Nintendo franchise. I mean, I was there when he met Reggie at E3 last year, as we've discussed, and he was like starstruck. Like, I mean, he like kind of lost his shit, but Reggie like standing next to him. Of course he would love to put this on Wii U, and he actually posted in our forums today. I saw this. We had a news story about why it's not coming to Wii U currently. It's because the mono game engine that it's built in is not supported by the Wii U. And we heard from the people who make Monogame, the development platform. They said they have tried working with Nintendo to get support for it, and they really kind of didn't get much of a response. Basically, it went nowhere. And they're still hopeful that maybe, you know, it'll happen later. But for right now, it doesn't seem like there's much motion on it. And then Tom in our forums posted on that news story in the talkback thread, and said that he and Dan Edelman, who's doing marketing and PR, you know, we interviewed Dan on this show last year before he had announced he was involved with Axiom Verge. But He said he talked to Dan about it back in 2012, 2013. I mean, back then, Dan was working at Nintendo. So, I mean, he would have been the guy to talk to about bringing Axiom Verge to Wii U. And at the time, of course, he got the same answer. Well, we don't support your engine, so you'd have to port it into another code base. And then that's a huge effort. You know, you're going to have to hire a bunch of people to help you with that. It's going to be expensive. And that could still be the solution, but that would have to come after the game is a big success on other platforms, you know, and they make a bunch of money, and then they can go and, or Nintendo can get their shit together and support Monogame. And then this and many other games that are made in Monogame can be ported over to Wii U much more easily, which is, I mean, Monogame, that's the point of it. It's like Unity. It's like you make the game once, you can port it to a lot of platforms with very little work. That's what it's for. But right now, Wii U is not one of the platforms that supports it. So
it has some fairly high-profile indie games, right? Like I think Bastion or maybe the other one.
Bastion is one of them,
and Skulls of the Shogun. There's quite a few. I think it was more popular a few years ago, which makes sense, right? Because Tom's been making this game for 5 years. So when he started it, maybe Monogame was the best thing available. I think Unity has become more popular and a little more widely supported now. But I'm totally sure that Wii U is capable of running stuff out of Monogame. But, you know, it's a closed platform. So the people who make Monogame have to get Nintendo's support to implement the libraries and everything and make it compatible. And they want to do that. And Nintendo's apparently, you know, we've only heard one side of the story, but apparently Nintendo just hasn't been responsive and proactive on that point. And I think that's really sad. Could still change.
Nintendo's, I'm sure at this point they're kind of like, okay, well, let's see how people react to a Metroid game that was not made by us, that is basically a clone of what we've been doing. Because, I mean, from everything that we've seen out of Nintendo, they're kind of like, well, I think they made some comment about Metroid, like they would have to have some new controller for it or something like that, something to that effect. They threw out some weird smokescreen answer about it. Like they would have to have something new to present to kind of sell it with in order to actually get a new game going or something like that. And it's, I'm sure for them, it's like, this is almost like market research for them, like free market research.
Well, and the fact is, I mean, all the reviews of Axiom Verge are going to come out and say, I sure wish Nintendo still made games like this, but thank goodness this dude does.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is exactly what I told Reggie last year at E3, but it's true. And when you play Axiom Verge, you cannot help but think, holy crap, this is what Nintendo would have made if N64 was a 2D system. You know, if they had just kept making 2D games on past, it's why Jake Kasdal, who made Skulls of the Shogun, you know, it's why he named his studio 17-bit. You know, it's the idea of like, I love 16-bit games. I want to make my own and basically just evolve them one step further than we could back then with a much smaller budget, much smaller team, better technology. And that's exactly how Axiom Verge feels. So again, I mean, I think if you love Shovel Knight, if you love Metroid, if you love 2D action games, you are going to go crazy for this. So, it comes out at the end of the month on PS4. And then I think there's like a 60-day exclusive thing for Sony or something. So it'll probably come to PC like in June.
Yeah. What is it? Is it $15, $20?
It's $20. Yeah. Cool. And, I would guess that if you don't have a PlayStation, but you have some kind of PC that you could play it on, I would guess the system requirements won't be super high for it, 'cause it is a 2D game. So maybe, you know, some of our listeners, can play it that way, but I dearly hope that this could come to Wii U at some point, because that really is the rightful home for a game like this. And, we'll see. That's a Nintendo's court. So anyway, I've talked way too long. Please, James, go next.
Good. I'm glad I got back in time for that handoff. So I've just been grinding through. I'm trying to clear some stuff out. We weirdly have some games coming up in the next few months that I want to have a clear slate for. In fact, we had one of them come out today, although I'm going to wait a little bit on that one. And then we've got some others coming up. So I wanted to just finish clearing stuff out. So I'm still playing Soul Nomad. It's still fucking insane game that I don't quite comprehend. I've also gone back onto Persona Q, and going back on is kind of an unfair statement. I've been playing that game sort of intermittently, you know, maybe an hour here and then maybe not touch it for a couple days and maybe a couple hours. And since I've had it for a while, I think I started playing it back in January. That's sort of pushed the number up into the 30s at this point in terms of number of hours. I've been making a concerted effort in the last week to sort of just grind through that game because I just, like I said, I'm trying to clear the slate, and that's the longest pole I've got in the tent, so I want to go ahead and knock that one down. And a couple things, I think it's just the Etrian style, just sort of, it's never going to click with me 100%. We've had the conversations about like risk versus reward in terms of game design, like if you lose, how bad is it? And in that one, it's kind of hard to say because you get to keep your map progress, so it's hard to judge exactly how bad it is for you to die. But it feels like a much greater pain because a lot of times you may spend a significant amount of time between saving because it is basically it's just how deep can you get to the dungeon from where you started last time before you have to go back out for whatever reason. And, you know, maybe because you're out of inventory, which has been a real pain in the ass lately. Or just because you're running low on something and you have to go back out and heal. Or just because you feel like, I've gone so far in, I need to save. Like this, I've been going, you know, regularly I'll go about 2 hours now. You know, a floor and a half. Maybe not even a whole floor sometimes. And then feel like I need to get out and save. But, you know, I think it's just a personal thing. You know, I don't think the Etrian style is ever going to really click with me. So, I mean,
All those things that you say about like pushing a little bit further and then going back and saving and selling your loot, those are all positive to me. Like, they're all.
To me, it just feels like I just wish I could save in the floor I'm on and just continue forward. Like, that it's like, okay, I was doing the second dungeon. So I just cleared the second and I'm sort of poking through the third at this point. And there's a stretch in the second dungeon where you don't gain access to any significant shortcuts for a while. Cause as you go through, as you pass places, you'll get shortcuts to go backwards. So when you come back through, you can sort of bypass big sections of it. And there's a ton of FOEs you have to kind of negotiate around in that part. So I had to bail at some point cause I ran out of inventory space and then realized, oh God, I'm going to have to go back through that whole section again. Fuck this.
Wait. Why would you have to go through that whole section again?
Because I hadn't hit a shortcut yet to bypass it again.
Oh, okay. So you don't mean like retrace your steps, like go back kind of like the dumb way to the,
right.
the base.
Just,
like because
just,
there is an item where
yeah,
you
no,
can
no,
just
I don't,
warp.
I don't mean to go out. The game actually tells you if you don't have that item before you go into the dungeon. It was getting my progress back that I was going to lose by leaving.
Right.
And the net result of having to do that a bunch of times is when I got to the boss of dungeon 2, I wrecked him. Just destroyed him and realized I might be overleveled for this nonsense. But it is what it is. You know, I understand that's part of that series and that's the appeal for some people. It's never going to really click with me.
Right. I think I've discovered with Etrian Odyssey that I am a fan of like old school dungeon crawlers. I would never have guessed and I would never go back today to those old like PC games for the most part where you have to have graph paper and you chart your progress on real paper because these kind of improvement of like quality of life improvements in Etrian Odyssey are important to me.
Yeah, and the mapping is one of those things that can slow you down too, especially when you get into some of the more complex labyrinths and you're like, well, I need to step on every tile even though I've looked at that tile from right next to it. Otherwise, I won't be able to open the chest.
Yeah, basically I go just glue my face against a wall and then I draw the wall and not before, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the things. Like the fact that if I'm standing right next to an open space, it doesn't count. I have to step on that space explicitly. Even though I drew the outline of the room, it's like, guys, you could help me out here a little bit, right? Like you could say there's no obstacle. He could very easily just step that way and it would be fine. He's just trying to go through this area quickly. Like it would be little playability things, I think. I mean, I probably would shave 2 or 3 hours off of the 30 I've dumped in it if I didn't have to step on every freaking space.
You
can pay off, but the rate to pay for the gap is pretty significant. I think it's like 4 or 5 play coins per percent. I mean,
I don't think it's that much, but yeah, what they're talking about is that there's this chest that you can, one per floor, and you can kind of cheat. Like, ideally, you want to step on every tile,
yep.
cover a floor 100%, yep. and then you can open the chest. But they let you use play coins to open them early, even though you don't have quite 100%.
And there are
but
some
it,
floors
it really varies.
And there are some floors you really can't do 100% just because there's something preventing you from doing it. I think the second floor of that dungeon, there's a whole section of tiles that if you step on them, you lose SP.
So, right, but there are items that prevent that damage.
There are, but they aren't available to you until after you get through that floor.
Right.
So I think the best you can do more or less is like 76%. So you have to pay a ton of play coins on that floor to get through it unless you come back through later, at which point the item probably doesn't help you all that much. But, you know, what I will say is the second dungeon is probably more so than the first. And in the third, it's kind of where, as far as I am in this one, I'm kind of getting the feeling like they've started to really get their stride for writing these characters. I think when I originally spoke about the game, I was complaining it doesn't feel very Persona-y. Like they're here. Yes, these are the characters. That's definitely their picture. But, like, the interactions and stuff just didn't feel right. You know, there was a lot of like, oh, that's so goofy. You're so silly characters. But it wasn't like the actual, like, their personalities, except for, like, the characters that have super extreme personalities.
Right.
In the second dungeon, which is the group date cafe, it's like that's where it starts to kind of like they really start to lay it on, and you're like, okay, these characters are all just a bunch of friggin' idiots.
Yeah, I really enjoyed those scenes, and there is some character development that's not really surprising if you've played the Persona games.
It's that it didn't come in earlier, I think, was what was getting me, because you probably don't hit the second dungeon, I would say, at the earliest 10 hours. I mean, that first dungeon especially is slow because you're still figuring that game out. That's a long time to go before you really start to get the characters in there and they start really kind of giving you sort of what these characters are and get the engagement down. And really, even then, that particular dungeon, it's really the last two floors of it is where they start to kind of lay it on. You're like, all right. The third one going in feels kind of the same way, that there's some character development. It's got back to the everybody's so silly kind of mentality, but whatever. But as an aside, as I'm just trying to finish the game at this point, you know, I do enjoy it to an extent. It's just there's those elements that feel like they make it take longer than it needs to, just to get right. some stuff done. Like the 60 item inventory is criminal. Like that's way too low. When you might fight an enemy and it gives you like 13 items, you're like, well, crap. And they're all rocks. Great. Great.
Well, yeah, but you can get rid of them.
You
want to store everything that you're not using
yeah.
At the base.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can, but even then, it's just like, okay. It doesn't take long to fill up your inventory.
No, that's true.
And
that's true.
Like, oh, I got to go back out. Or I have to dump stuff. And at some point, you've sort of whittled your inventory down to only the most valuable items, if you know what those are. You may not know what those are. So there's some exchange there. But
so you guys pump for Etrian Odyssey Untold Story 2?
Or Etrian Mystery Dungeon. And that's kind of where I wanted to go
it's
now.
It's an all so Etrian sale. Everything must go.
Jeez.
There's a lot of those. There's a lot of those. And also, like, maybe when Atlas had their last sale, which was not that long ago, and in fact there's another one right now.
Yeah, there's always an Etrian game on sale on the eShop.
Yeah, I was so pumped from playing Persona Q that I just went and got Untold for $15. So
you're addicted.
Kind of where I wanted to go with this one. So I was talking to friend of the show and developer of I've Got to Run Seren, and we were discussing this game in particular because I think I was getting. She's played it maybe twice now, and I was just getting incredibly frustrated. With
you
the
mean
in-out.
She's played through it, like beaten it completely?
Yes. Yeah. I was getting frustrated with the in-out at some point because there was this particular dungeon was just being a real pain in the ass, and it came. The joke was about how many of these frickin' Etrian games there are, and how Etrian. Mystery Dungeons has been sort of subverts that it's more of a Mystery Dungeon game than an Etrian game, and that it's just brutal. It's so friggin' hard. But what we were talking about is like, man, they could just like cross license to make Etrian games for everything at this point because they would totally do it. So we had a conversation about the on this show about how Nintendo sort of licensing to their partners, their strategic partners, to make games with their franchises on them. So they did that with Tecmo Koei, whose big game is the Dynasty Warriors franchise. They're doing that with Gung Ho, whose big game is Puzzle Draw. Would Guillaume, as the Etrian aficionado, would you play a Etrian themed or a Nintendo themed Etrian game based on some franchise?
Well, probably. I mean, but, yeah, sure. I would play normal vanilla Etrian Odyssey games.
The question is, Johnny, as someone who doesn't play Etrian games, would you play a Nintendo themed Etrian game? Would that be enough?
If it was just fan service, no. But I know that in Persona Q, you know, it's not just Etrian with Persona characters. There's some aspects of Persona gameplay into it. So it would depend. I mean, it
is an Etrian game. More than
like,
anything
would I
else.
Would I play a Xenoblade Etrian game? Maybe, yeah. If it actually played kind of like Xenoblade, you know, then yeah.
To steal her example, if they set an Etrian game in Hyrule, and that was the game, and you know, it probably leans harder on Etrian gameplay than it does Zelda gameplay, because it's probably not going to have real-time combat in it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they are branching out a bit with Mystery Dungeon. Like, would that be enough to get you going, okay, maybe? Because that wasn't enough for Dynasty Warriors, because you haven't bought Hyrule Warriors yet, as far as I remember.
Well, I'm more inclined to enjoy Etrian Odyssey than I am Hyrule Warriors. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Hyrule Warriors is really fun. I mean, it legitimately is a fun game.
Yeah, to me, that's a game if I could rent Wii U games easily, then I would probably rent Hyrule Warriors and play it for like 2 days and be like, okay, I get it. I've had enough. But I'm not inclined to buy it for, you know, $50.
Yeah.
And I think that, Johnny, you would take to the Etrian Odyssey formula a little bit more easily, just because there's a lot of what makes Dragon Quest enjoyable in Etrian Odyssey. You know, like you can't really put the two games side to side, but a lot of that kind of hardcore RPG feeling is infused in both games.
Yeah, I got that sense when I played the demo for 4 a couple years ago now on 3DS. And I especially like that overworld stuff where you're in the airship. I don't know how much that seems like that's kind of a small part
of
the series.
In the mainline Etrian games, there's a decent amount of that. But in these spinoffs, there's been significantly less.
Yeah, but I did enjoy that. So for me, although from hearing you guys talk about these games a whole bunch, probably what I would like to see is an Etrian game where it was a lot more streamlined. Like it was shorter, the dungeons were shorter, maybe a little bit easier, a little more forgiving, a little more flexibility in certain aspects. And then, you know, so if one of these spinoffs, if we kind of got that as a side effect because of whatever they were combining it with,
right.
You know, if it ended up being a Pokemon Etrian Odyssey game.
Oh,
so,
Jesus,
you know,
Christ. That's still a lot of copies.
Why not? And if they're gearing it for a somewhat younger audience, but it's still basically Etrian Odyssey, it's just something that you can play a little more casually, that's probably more appealing to me. Because Etrian just, it sounds fun, but it just sounds really stressful and really involved. And I don't often play games that are quite that intricate.
Yeah, and to this point, I'm not suggesting that they should go turn around and make, you know, Etrian Mario. But I'm suggesting that given Nintendo's recent propensity to put their characters on top of the, you know, the franchise game for their strategic partners, and Sega is obviously a strategic partner, Atlas is a strategic partner of Nintendo's, especially for the 3DS.
Fire Emblem Cross Shin Megami Tensei.
Yeah, exactly. That game. That freaking game. You know, this is the kind of thing that I would imagine they're exploring. And, you know, I've gone through a couple in my head, sort of like theoretical, like what could they do? Like how could they take the core franchise that of one of these partners and, you know, Nintendo-ize it? And, you know, I'm interested in what, you know, listeners come up with in that particular that concept, because I think there's some obvious ones that we're probably missing that would
Paper Mario might work, maybe.
Maybe, but I'm curious what franchise gameplay they'd throw that on top of. I mean, you could throw it on top of Etrian, but I mean, there's a lot.
Yeah, that's what I had in mind.
Oh, okay, for Atlas, I mean, really, Etrian's your go to, but I mean, they've got other partners that they work with a lot that you could probably come up with something. So, if you've got anything, I'd be interested in hearing it, know that we may steal it on the show at some point as a prediction, then just take all the credit for it if it happens. Fair warning.
Don't worry, it won't happen.
Yeah, before finishing up this topic, I just want to say I'm also still playing it 65 hours in.
Oh, God!
I just started the final dungeon.
Is that dungeon?
That definitely makes the game longer than Etrian Odyssey 4, which I'm not too happy with. But
so you're saying,
I'm still enjoying the game.
You're saying
so.
About halfway through Dungeon 3 at 30 hours is actually making pretty good time?
Yep.
I felt like I was making terrible time.
Well, you'll probably go faster if you're using Naoto and using the kind of kill all spells. The game is kind of broken.
So you're saying I should go put Naoto in the party?
Yeah, basically, because like you were saying in a previous episode that you wish that the enemy encounters were kind of just like, okay, like attack, 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 and you're done, you forget about it.
Right.
That's kind of how the game becomes when you have her in your party. So
They could turn into like, you know, 5, 6, 7. Like, so in the last dungeon, I was never in danger fighting an FOE, but it might take me 15 turns to get rid of it.
Right.
It
doesn't work on FOEs, but
well, yeah, I didn't figure it would. But I mean, that's kind of like what these battles can feel like sometimes. It's just 15 turns of no danger.
All right, and Guillaume, just to clarify, the game that you've now played for 65 hours and got to the final dungeon is Persona Q.
Exactly.
So we talked about so many other games in between from where James started, and that's partly my fault. But
right. Basically, what I'm saying, 65 hours in Persona Q, I'm not done. Still a whole dungeon left.
Oh, my God.
And Etrian Odyssey, I was done by that point.
If you want a big, meaty something to play on your 3DS, there you go.
That Yes. Yep.
And anything with the name Atlas on it.
That is... that.
Yeah,
that,
yeah exactly.
And you can get it on sale, probably.
That one probably not, but other ones yes.
Well, no, I don't think Persona Q's gone on sale yet, but I'm sure it will at some point.
Yeah, it'll probably be a while.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on and hear from John.
All right, Johnny. Well, you know, the topic du jour seems to be games that were inspired by Super Metroid that are not on Nintendo platforms. So I decided to pick up Ori and the Blind Forest on Xbox One. This is also on PC, so people can actually play it on PC. Mm. It's on Steam.
It's getting hella reviews.
Yeah, and that's, you know, like really, I mean, I saw this, you know, kind of like, you know, hey, this has been released on, you know, on Twitter. I just saw it in my news feed, didn't think anything of it. But then, you know, I started hearing, you know, I started like kind of like looking at some of the trailers and stuff and saw that it was getting really, really good reviews. And so I decided to pick it up because I haven't really had a, you know, kind of a platformer to really, you know, beyond Mario stuff, I haven't really had a platformer like this, Super Metroid style, to kind of sink my teeth into for a while. So, and it looked like, and to be perfectly honest, it's really nice having a game for my Xbox One that is not a first-person shooter, because that is, I believe, that is the only type of game
that's ever come out on the Xbox One.
Unless you're talking sports games or racing games, it's first-person shooters.
It's either first-person shooters nobody plays anymore or broken first-person shooters.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah.
Welcome to Xbox One.
Yeah, this was really, really something I was like, hey, you know what? I really feel like getting this for Xbox One, so I picked it up. And I mean, it's Super Metroid all the way. But it's has kind of like a cartoony sort of feel, but not cartoon, more like Ni No Kuni sort of kind of whimsical, but it has a very dark tone to it. Mm-hmm. So,
and it's more physics-y than Super Metroid, isn't it?
Yeah.
I played the demo at E3 last year, and I liked it, but the demo, at least that they had, I didn't get a ton of Metroid vibe. Like, I know it was being kind of sold that way, but just in the amount that I played, I didn't get a lot of the sense of progression and stuff like that. But I definitely got the sense that it's fun just to move around in this game because it's fast and you can like stick to walls kind of, and it's slippery, slidey. Kind of, I've heard it compared a lot to Super Meat Boy, and I got that.
Yeah,
sense.
I can see that. I can see that. It's not, it's not as over the top in terms of movement, but it is sort of, because the way the story starts is your character is actually a leaf from kind of like a tree of life sort of thing that, and the opening has this extended opening that is actually pretty sad. It starts off really, really dark where your character Ori is a leaf that blows off of this tree and is an orphan, and it gets picked up by this creature, that lives in this forest by itself, and you know they form this bond, and something terrible happens. You're not really sure what, but the forest begins to die. And of course that has, you know, the creature that has taken in Ori dies along with it. So it's a, you know, kind of a little bit of a spoiler alert there, but it's like, that's kind of the opening where you're this orphan sort of just trying to kind of find out sort of where you, you know, kind of where you fit in and sort of you're, like at the start, you don't even really know really what you're actually going after. You're just kind of, so, which is cool because, you know, sort of the story is sort of, you're kind of, as you're exploring, the story sort of unfolds around you, which is kind of nice. But very, very, very Super Metroid-ish. You know, it has some light RPG elements in it though. So, what happens is as you kill, monsters, you know, they drop these kind of glowing orbs that amount to experience points. And as you kind of gain these experience points, you have this little meter down at the bottom of the screen that fills up. And, the more it fills up, you get, points to spend, that you can spend in this other menu. Kind of reminds me of God of War. You know how in God of War where you get the, whatever, the blood or whatever the hell it is.
It's blood. What are we talking about?
You're free to spend on whatever you want kind of thing. Like within a range of items that, like, you know, of things that, you know, that you can do. It's the same kind of thing where you have this tree where, you know, one seems to improve the balls that you throw, like your attacks, so one improves that. The other one improves the way that you can kind of. I'm sure it branches off into other things, but the first two items are you can save your game sort of anywhere you want. Like there are the Metroid style save points, but you can also kind of create temporary save points when you're jumping through the environment that you can save your game there once, I believe. And then you can improve that power so that you can come back to those save points that you create and save your game again. So you can kind of make things easier for yourself. And then the other one, the other tree improves kind of quality of life stuff. Like on the map, you'll see, you know, like power-up items will be displayed on the map. So you kind of have some choice there, which is pretty neat. But I mean, it's really fun to explore. I mean, the world is just beautiful. You know, it has a lot of the backtracking type gameplay. You know, you'll come up to an area, you know, a lot of it has to do with you're either out kind of running around in a forest, obviously, or you're going down, you know, in caves. But then of course, you know, you go across bridges and you can see that at some point you will get an item that will let you dive under the water, which currently poisons you. You know, stuff like that. So to Metroid fans, it won't be anything too out of the ordinary, but just kind of the way the game is executed is really, really, really well done. So I'm really enjoying it. I've opened up, I think, part of the first map right up to, like, the way the story progresses is it gives you a target to go to. Not necessarily a boss, but kind of the next thing that will push the story forward. And you kind of just go across like that.
So it's more like Metroid Prime or Fusion in that respect. Mm-hmm. Like you bring up the map and it says, hey, there's this something over here in an area you haven't been to. Yep. And you have to figure out how to get to it, but you at least know. See, like, that's one thing I think some people like that and some people don't, but I'll say that in Axiom Verge, I've been mostly pleasantly surprised that it doesn't do that ever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't mind it. Because really, I really like to explore.
I don't really mind it either, but I know some people it bothers a lot.
Yeah, like I have yet to fight a boss in this game, so I would say I'm probably about halfway through the first map, the first area. but yeah, I mean, I would recommend it highly. I mean, you know, if you're looking for something with that sort of you know, kind of that Ni No Kuni feel, that, you know. Like that kind of tone rather than something sci-fi like Axiom Verge, which I'm assuming Axiom mm-hmm. Verge is straight sci-fi.
Oh, it's the most sci-fi. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is definitely a great game. And in fact, I'm actually really impressed at how good it is. And of course it will never come to Nintendo platforms because it's actually published by Microsoft, made by Moon Studios, which from what I've read is some sort of kind of collection of different developers from various studios. I'm not too sure, but but yeah, Ori and the Blind Forest, I would highly recommend it. It's on Steam. It's same thing as Axiom Verge, $20. So yeah, if you're looking for kind of like a Metroid fix that that doesn't feel like a Metroid game but has the same play style, I mean, definitely, I'd highly recommend it. It's really good.
It's a good time to be alive, isn't it?
It is. It is. Let me tell you.
Even if you've only got Nintendo systems, I mean, Stealth Link 2, if you haven't played that, you should go back to that. Shantae and the Pirate's Curse.
Finish that.
Right. Definitely. Shantae and the Pirate's Curse has some of that kind of type of progression.
Yeah.
And what's the Jules Watcham?
Zeo Drifter. Yeah. It's
Zeo Drifter.
Like, super short, but yeah, a lot of fun.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree with all that. So it's, like I said, it's a good time to be alive. But Guillaume, let's hear about what you've been playing before we wrap up this segment.
Sure. So a kind listener bought Mario vs. DK Tipping Stars for the 3DS. And so this listener, Brandon, doesn't have a Wii U, wasn't interested, and like didn't know who to give the kind of cross-buy code too, so he sent it to us, and I happily claimed it. I wasn't really planning on buying the game because it seemed a little bit too similar to previous games in the series, but for free, sure. Yeah, I'll give it a try. So thank you, Brendan. So Mario vs. DK Tipping Stars. If you've never played this type of game, it's really kind of lemmings-like in that you don't have direct controls, direct control over the characters. These kind of Mario figurines are moving along. They start moving when you touch them, and after that, you kind of have to create a path for them. You can collect girders, pieces of girders, and then you can lay them down to cover like spikes or holes or whatever. And so the goal is to just collect every coin in the level and then make it to the exit. The game really, I'm not sure what NST, the developer of the game, like what they spent so much time doing, because I'm not really seeing a whole lot of new ideas. You're laying down like conveyor belts, which, you know, been there, done that, trampolines, girders, like very, very few elements seem new. Like some really cool stuff, like magnetic floors where the Mario minis will just keep walking and then kind of walk upside down. Like they will go around, instead of falling down the ledge, they'll just kind of keep walking, and all of a sudden they're under it. All of that stuff, like, that's been done before in that series. So, like, maybe there's one element that I hadn't seen before. There are pipes, like Mario pipes in the game. You know, you enter one end and you exit another place. Now this time, it's been inspired by level editor, but there are pipes that you can move around. Like, you can take, one end of the pipe and just like touch it and slide it to another spot, a predetermined spot. You can't just put it anywhere. Otherwise it would make the game too easy. But yeah, like that's like the one new thing that I've seen. So yeah, like the game doesn't really distinguish itself enough from the other games in the series. And that's very disappointing to me because, the previous game in the series, Minis on the Move, was completely different. Instead of this lemmings-esque gameplay, it was more kind of a pipe dream gameplay where you're laying down a track for the minis to follow. And,
yeah, like if you've ever done hacking in BioShock, that's
right.
Exactly what it's like.
Right. So I really, really enjoyed that entry, and it was like half as cheap as this game is. I think this game is $20 on the eShop.
I can't
so it seems
believe
like,
the price of this. It must be because of the cross-buy thing.
But it must be, but that seems like such, like, come on, like just sell it on each system instead and, you know, sell it for $10 on each platform. But like, this is just weird. And it's really overpriced for what it is. You can find the exact same content basically on the 3DS for half as cheap.
Or you know, for just some Club Nintendo coins even.
Or for some Club Nintendo coins, yes. So yeah, it's very disappointing. But even the level editor is not a distinguishing feature because we have had level editors in previous games and we've had level sharing in previous games. Now it doesn't work anymore because it was all working on GameSpy network, I think. But still, like, we used to have the exact same thing. The one thing that's different is that, I don't know, like, it doesn't have minis in the title, so it makes it easier to stand out. Like, and also the fact that it's also on, like, the first game of the series on a home console. Like, this game never came out on the Wii. Yep. No version came out on WiiWare or retail.
Jeez, I played one. God, this dates me. I played a Mario versus DK game for GameCube that never came out.
Yeah. Because it never came out. Like,
the idea was that you would make levels on the GameCube because you had the full screen, mm-hmm. and then you would use the link cable to send it to your GBA.
What a terrible idea that was.
Yeah. Apparently they agreed in the end because they never brought it out. But I was like, wait, I've seen one of these games on a TV before. Oh, yeah,
At NST got a firm reprimand for pushing that idea.
No, I mean, I think this is definitely a series where they experiment. And this sounds to me like Tipping Stars sounds like a purely economical experiment in technology, in the sense that, you know, this is the first game Nintendo has released that was built on the web framework, HTML5 platform, which, you know, one of the advantages of that is that it's supposed to be cheaper to make games, and you can easily make them compatible with both 3DS and Wii U, which is clearly what they did here.
The web framework for 3DS is very much a new thing. I can't say that out loud, so cut that part out. But
okay.
This is the first, officially the first web framework 3DS game ever made.
Okay, yeah. And I think that explains a lot of what's going on here, because it sounds like they kind of made this quickly just to, you know, test out the technology, and they were more interested in, can we actually make this with the web framework engine than can we make an exciting new and innovative, you know, puzzle game of this storied concept.
That NST makes these games. Like, these are the games they make. They make this series, and their job is to experiment and push technology and also make these games.
Can you do it one more time?
It's more like, hey, by the way, Wednesday I want you to start on the next one of these games.
Yep.
We haven't finished the last one. I know.
I swear to God, it's the last one. Then I'm going to retire. This is it. I'm out.
I do think there's something, you know, mildly interesting and cool about the fact that you can use this level editor and make levels that are compatible with both the 3DS and the Wii U version.
Yeah,
you know,
that's pretty cool.
They interact with each other because they are basically the same game. But I do like that your content is compatible. That's cool.
Right. But we kind of had that with WarioWare DIY.
To an extent.
You couldn't do anything. You couldn't make your own games on the Wii, but you could play them.
Right.
Yes. You know, like the full game was on DS, and you could download, you could buy an app on WiiWare where you could play a selection of micro games, and you could also import games that people
made. Given the structure of that, though, those two systems, it ended up limiting the what you could do in terms of using the DS functionality as
true.
So in this case, it works out better because they're not trying to do anything special. You know, it's a platformer.
They certainly are not. That's the problem.
I didn't mean to be so blunt with that statement.
you know, the whole level sharing thing, it would be neat if it worked perfectly. It doesn't. You can filter, like, by default, you see the most popular levels, and of course, they're all terrible. They're all levels that give you basically free stars. You don't even have to touch anything, and Mario is just going to make it to the end, and you're going to get the highest score. You're going to get 3 stars, and you can play it over and over again and always get 3 stars.
It's the automatic, soundtrack generator for Smash Brothers Melee.
Right. So the most popular levels are that. Some of them are really cool, though. There's one, I wish I knew the exact title, but it was called something like Mario's 3 Trials, and the guy really went to great pains to make it unique. Like, you enter, you know, 3 pipes at the beginning, like one after the other. Each brings you to a different section where a different type of challenge
So his three trials like, awaits you. He has to clean like the Uggian stables. I mean, what's he got to do?
Not exactly. It's more like, okay, so in this level, like you're dealing with conveyor belts and it's pretty tricky. And then the next one, it's going to be the magnetic rails. But still, like I really admire the imagination and the work that was put into it. I did create a level and it's just like the first thing that I could throw together in 1 hour. It is, you know, like it is perfectly serviceable. The level editor is perfectly serviceable, but it doesn't really tell you anything, doesn't teach you anything. Basically expects that, okay, so you've played the game, you've seen what levels basically look like. Try to imitate that, you know? And I wish that it had more of a WarioWare DIY to it, where it actually taught you, hey, so with all these tools, you can make a level. Here's how you make a good level. God knows I could use a tutorial like that.
Well, and that makes you wonder about Mario Maker and how they're going to address that, right?
Oh, I'm sure it's going to be... Well, it has to be much better. It has to be.
You would think, yeah. It's much more of a marquee title that, you know, a lot more people are going to play. They're going to hit a much wider audience with Mario Maker. So it seems like they should be providing some more guidance on...
Right.
And
some of my friends actually made some really cool levels. Like someone made a reverse Donkey Kong level where Pauline has to save Mario from Donkey Kong. It's really cool. The problem is I can't find it reliably. There is a filter where you can just search for the levels that the people you're friends with, the people on your friends list, and the people you follow. So there is a filter to just see those levels, but you have to kind of refresh it like a dozen times before anything shows up. It's really, really weird. Huh. It just doesn't work. So that's really annoying.
That's the authentic Nintendo experience.
Yeah.
Are you certain that it will include the people you follow on Miiverse? Because I've never heard of Miiverse being integrated in a game quite that way.
Right. Well, it should. It's really flat out states, yeah, friends and people you follow.
Oh, cool.
So it should work. And this guy is like on my friends list, my actual friends list, but his levels don't reliably show up when I search for them.
The funny part about is that even Nintendo is now recognizing, hey, we probably should have given you more friends. We're going to count your followers too. Or your followees too.
So like Brendan, who gave me this code, downloadable code, has made a level. I added him to the people I follow on Miiverse. I couldn't find his level. So maybe next time.
Oh boy, it's Mario versus Donkey Kong, the Master Chief Collection.
Mm-hmm. Well, not anymore.
And,
but he can get online.
He can get online.
It's not the Master Chief Collection.
Give it 4 months. They'll fix it in 4 months.
In 4 months, you'll be able to find any level you want.
Yep.
Yeah, and very quickly, I just want to say, about 2 weeks ago, I went to a Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate kind of party. I got there at like 8 at night, and people had been playing since like 2 in the afternoon. So I was kind of apprehensive. Like, I'm not a big fan of the game. I mean, like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I was like, okay, everyone will have been playing, even the noobs will have been playing since early afternoon. They're going to be way past my level, and they're going to be, you know, they won't want to bother, you know, teaching me what to do. But no, it turns out, like, Apparently, everyone knows what it's like to start out with these games. Like, everyone has been there, so everyone was very patient and showing me tips that, very basic tips, like how to not waste time doing stuff the wrong way, and instead, okay, just send all the stuff, like, here's how you send...
waste stuff doing things the right way.
Right, well, like, here's how to directly send all of your loot to your chest instead of carrying it around and having to, you know... Well, go through these inventory issues that you mentioned, person at queue, actually, or stuff like that. So that's pretty cool. And the weapon I had chosen for my guy starting out was the Charge Blade, because it just looked cool. It's this sword and shield combo, which you can basically, you can hook the shield to the end of the sword, and it becomes an axe. Yeah. So that's pretty kick-ass. I had gone through the tutorial at the beginning of the game, and it basically says, okay, just whack with the sword a couple of times. It's going to charge up this meter, and once it's full, just, you know, morph the sword and shield into the axe and just wail away. And okay, that's cool. So that's how I was playing. But someone else looked over my shoulder, someone else who does use the charge blade, and just was like, see me after class, buddy. And so he gave me some really, really good tips. And it turns out that even though the tutorials are much better than they used to be, that 4 has the best tutorials that the series ever had, it still doesn't teach you nearly everything. I didn't know that you could hold down the button to charge up your blade, and then that charges up your sword considerably faster. And then when you do kind of the super move, like the hit that can really, you know, deal a lot of damage to enemies, you can actually cancel it. And you cancel it and it charges up your shield. And then you can do all sorts of cool stuff that you would never, ever in a million years guess that you could do. If you did not have someone looking over your shoulder telling you, hey, like, you're playing it wrong.
Yep.
Or if you weren't watching, like, a YouTube video, a tutorial.
Yeah.
So it's really, really cool to go, like, in person, to play in person with other people, go on a hunt and have people give you feedback and teaching you how to play well. And now I'm equipped with, like, this badass armor that basically, when I go back, I haven't been able to play again since then, but when I go back to the game, I'm going to go through the early missions, and it's going to be a piece of cake.
Yeah. Now, so, is the armor that you got, is that something that you can get early on?
Yeah, pretty early on. It's like, it's all made of the, I don't know the names, I'm sorry, but the monster that breaks rocks in front of you.
The Tetsukabra armor?
I think so.
Yeah, I've heard that's way overpowered. That's
right.
That does not surprise me.
So I got that.
Yep.
I'm pretty happy with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to playing more.
Yeah, that is, I mean, that's the ideal really for that game. And I mean, that's why that game is so huge in Japan, is because, you know, like all these other games too, I mean, you have these meetups.
Right.
They just happen everywhere, like at street side cafes.
First off, know? John and I had a fun time with Tetsukabra.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's why you hear about these weird things in Japan where they like sell like the giant pack of fries at McDonald's. Like, you've seen pictures of it. It's like a bunch of just large fries stacked together because you buy them as a group and then just sit there and eat French fries and play this game.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's also the saltiest thing on the menu, so you buy drinks. You buy a lot of drinks.
That's how they get you.
That's how they get you.
But to end this, I just want to say, if you're just starting out in Monster Hunter, search for Gaijin Hunter on YouTube. You'll find tutorials for every weapon in the game, and they're hugely useful. And they will teach you stuff that you would never, ever know otherwise.
Yeah, I'll check him out. I've seen some of his stuff advertised, and I got to check him out. Because I know that there's stuff about the Greatsword that I'm just not doing.
Right.
But be careful. You search for Gaijin Hunter and Monster Hunter together, because Gaijin Hunter also means something else in addition in Japan that you may not want videos of.
or maybe
it could mean a lot of things, but it does have a negative connotation. So yeah, just add Monster Hunter to that. Yeah,
do less Monster Hunter and search. Let's see what you get.
Right.
just roll the dice.
Just have a go.
I'm feeling lucky. Man, I'm still super interested in Monster Hunter. I don't have room in my life for it right now, but I have a feeling by the end of the year I'm going to end up getting sucked into it. Because I'm hearing too many good things.
One of us.
Yeah, and I've always wanted to like it. It hasn't happened yet. But it, you know, for all the reasons we've discussed, this sounds like the one that might finally do it. Okay, well, let's wrap up this segment. It's gone on for a long time. We're going to take a much-needed break. When we come back, we've got your listener mail, so stick around. Welcome back, everybody. It is time for listener mail, and as always, the address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. The first email this week is from Human Papillon Virus. That means butterfly in French. Right, Guillaume?
It does. But I think it's a play on words, right?
Yes, instead of papilloma.
I thought it was just a reference to Trauma Team.
Maybe.
Man, I miss Trauma Team. Anyway. What do you think should be the future of Wario? Game & Wario was a budget title and was neither critically nor commercially successful. And with all the platformers the Nintendo already publishes, it seems that the Wario Land franchise is redundant and has been let go. He seems like he's teetering on the edge of retirement, but on the upside, he is a pretty flexible character.
Oh, end of question.
That is, yes.
Proceed that is, to make end answers.
Wario's in Smash Brothers, for what that's worth.
Wario Land Shake It is in beautiful 4-3.
There should be a Shake It 2. Or just a, follow-up. A follow-up to Shake
Well,
It.
Well, I mean good feels coming up free soon once they're done with Yarn Yoshi.
They've taken a long time to make Yarn Yoshi.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, after Yoshi's New Island, you would think, okay, I guess they're done with Yoshi's Island for a while, and then they're coming up with another Yoshi's Island game.
New
for
Yoshi's
the
New Island.
Exactly. And I don't know. Like, there are these franchises that you think, okay, I guess they're kind of done, but then Nintendo keeps trotting them out again. It never seems to be the ones that we want them to trot out again, like Metroid, or in this case, Wario Land. But, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't count it out. Like, I would not be surprised if we saw more Wario platformers in the future.
They're not going to retire Wario as a character because Wario serves a purpose of being sort of their anti-hero. They're sort of like, we can be funny with this guy. It's easy.
So right. He's like their hitman. They can always bring him in when they feel like it to do some damage.
Thank you, John. Like, yep. I mean, from my standpoint, I like Wario Land Shake. I like Wario as a character regardless of the format he's in because he's sort of the anti-Nintendo character. I mean, he's sort of how Nintendo would create a parody of their own characters. I mean, that's effectively what he is. Like, he's weirdly self-aware in a lot of ways. I mean, all the ways they try to make him unpalatable make him more enjoyable as a thing.
Yeah, he is almost a joke to begin. Like, he kind of comes from a joke, you know. They've been very self-conscious about how they use him. I mean, I would say one way they could bring him back and make him and do it in a fresh way would be to have him team up meaningfully with Waluigi, like for a two-player game or something where you're switching out characters or something like. And that would, I mean, if you think about it, they often like to shine a different light on Wario and kind of look at him from different angles. If you see the way that he's used in all these different franchises, I think seeing him in this kind of like uneasy partnership with another character might be a way to illuminate him in a different way.
They have
add a new element to it.
They have made a tremendous effort to not put Waluigi in anything that is not a party game.
You could call it Wawa.
They'll do that. That's what they call the plaza, remember? Like to the point of he's probably been in about 13 games now. He's not been in any game that don't involve some kind of sporting equipment or Mario Party. It's remarkable because he shows up for the first time on the N64.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah, he's been around a long time.
He's been around a long time and has never
15 years this
and has
year.
Never
Mario
appeared
Tennis
in an,
2000.
Never appeared in an actual game. That's not
that is yeah. That's a really good point.
It's
golf
bizarre.
Games, tennis games are not actual games.
I'm telling you, he's the hitman. He's the hitman. They throw him on the shelf unless they need him.
Like I would almost rather they just make a Waluigi game because I feel like there's like his character. Like whenever they do characterize him, is kind of like he's almost sadistic in some ways.
He's so funny.
Like he's like he's much more just seems like Wario just wants money. I mean that's kind of the rub for him. Like he just is just incredibly greedy and doesn't give a crap what he has to get money. Like Waluigi just generally seems to be a miscreant. Like he just doesn't really he's just bad. He just does like I mean it's sort of the go-to for him, but like, you know, in the intro to one of those Mario Tennis games, he's just vandalizing posters. And I mean, he's just sort of this agent of misbehavior.
Yeah, the only time that he was a credible villain was in Super Mario Land 2. And even then, like, he's not doing much. Like, you see him once at the end of the game. He uses the same powers that Mario uses. And after that, he's just a big guy who eats garlic. And
what Wario is only, you know, modus operandi is, I need to get money. And, like he doesn't... They never come off as he's evil because he likes to do evil things. It's just like, hey, there's some gold. I want that.
greedy and he's slovenly and, you know, he's gross. He farts. He picks his nose.
Yeah, like, he's unkempt and greedy. Like, so, Waluigi, they just make it seem like he's like an adult Dennis the Menace.
He hasn't been fleshed out, and I think he does need his own game. Let me throw this at you, since we're already subverting this topic so much.
Well, that's what we do here, Radio Free Nintendo.
That's what we try. We do our best. Waluigi's Mansion.
Actually,
if they're going to make another Luigi's Mansion, that's one way to spice it up and do something different.
Actually,
to your
partnership idea, what if they went and their next, I can't remember what they call that RPG series, the Mario Brothers one.
Mario and Luigi.
Mario and Luigi. If they just did a Wario and Waluigi game.
Wario and Waluigi, the RPG.
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Actually, I was going to say something like that. Amazing. Like, just make some sort of Earthbound-esque RPG with Waluigi and Wario in the lead.
Or like, what if the next they do a Mario and Luigi game? Just do another one. I mean, they're going to do another one at some point.
Oh, yeah.
And they just sell this as like, you know, 6-hour, 7-hour DLC add-on. It's just using the engine again. They could even reuse some of the areas. It's just them following behind and their characters just being bemused by whatever has happened. Because, I mean, that's kind of what they did with they reused some of the assets to an extent with the Luigi add-on for New Super Mario Bros. U.
Mm-hmm.
Sell it as add-on content where you do recycle assets, but you get to sort of put these characters in that context and just get extra life out of the game.
I think you will see more stuff like that, because that New Super Luigi U was a big hit.
Yeah.
They sold a lot of those.
And it's a way of doing DLC that's closer to like an old PC add-on pack.
Yeah, it's an expansion.
Yeah. So it's...
I like that.
You get to reuse... you get to reuse more content that way, like more art assets, because you're remixing them and you're doing it in bulk. Versus where if you're trying to create like a really small thing, you can't really reuse a bunch of art assets. People feel more taken by it, I guess is the way of putting it. So you can keep your art budget down a little bit. And I think having them follow behind in a Mario and Luigi game, like just sort of assessing the damage that has been wrought, would be kind of funny.
Well, I tell you, I don't think we've seen the end of WarioWare as a franchise. I think
probably
certainly
not, no.
And James, you could probably tell me for sure, but was Game & Wario made by the WarioWare team?
I believe it was, yes.
Okay. I think it was.
There's probably not one in development right now because they're making a new Rhythm Tengoku for 3DS.
Well, and the Rhythm Tengoku team has some of the same members. It also has some external parties involved. It's a little bit more of a complicated... You know,
it's got that music guy.
Yeah, like he's designer. I don't know where he's at right now. Cause I know he was having some health issues, but they bring in some external development assistance as well in those games.
Yeah, but they're probably not making Rhythm in Heaven and WarioWare at the same time.
Probably not. No.
But I think there will be more WarioWare, and I was just thinking, like, you know, one thing they could do with it is maybe make that an exclusive new 3DS game and mess around with some of the features on that system. I know it's not super obvious that, but you could, if you think about it, because a lot more people are able to use the 3D on the new system, they could make a WarioWare that's at least partially focused on playing games that were 3D as a factor, like maybe distinguishing between layers. You know, you have to use that to play a, you know, Where's Waldo type thing, which they've done before.
This is Sakamoto's area. So, he was on Tomodachi Life. Which is sort of which when you think about it, you're like, yeah, that makes sense. And I want to say he's also involved in kind of an oversight role on Splatoon right now. So he's probably got his own game going on right now because it was
and all those Metroid games that are in development.
Yeah, exactly.
He's probably a consultant at least on those.
Yeah, this is an SPD game. So yeah, there will be another WarioWare game. I think on the 3DS. It's kind of surprising they haven't put one out yet because in a way it sort of makes sense. Like you could build a game around 3D, but I think their concern is always people will turn the 3D off or that somebody will be under 6 and their eyes won't be developed enough that they can see in 3 dimensions. And so I think they've probably been somewhat gun shy on using 3D. That was a joke, by the way. Using 3D as a game conceit. I think on Wii U, because they wanted to make a handful of. Well, I think with the Wii U one, it was they made those experiences as that initial Wii U demo because most of the stuff we saw that was it E3 2012?
No,
it was 2011. Yeah. Most of the stuff we saw, because you and I were there, ended up either in Nintendo Land or in Wario.
Game and Wario.
The Shield Pose demo.
Didn't necessarily feel like that stuff was part of a cohesive vision from the start.
No. They had to find a home for
this
stuff.
It was kind of pulled together because, hey, we need to put it together a package
Sell. Like Measure Up ended up somewhere in one of those.
Yeah. Game and Wario, yep.
It also sort of ended up in the Yoshi's fruit cart. Like, so a lot of those ideas ended up being sort of ingested by one of those two minigame collections, and then we had the situation where they had to put it, the Nintendo Land one, they sort of themed it one way, and then they had to find a theme for the other one, so they just threw the WarioWare theme on top of it and called it a day.
Yeah, and, you know, Game & Wario definitely suffered from being released at a time that it was fairly close to the launch, so we had just had Nintendo Land not that long before, and there wasn't much released between those two games either.
Right.
So a lot of people felt like, well, I've played Nintendo Land. I really want something different than that. And yet you're kind of just giving me more of it, except it's not as good and it doesn't come packed in with the system.
Right. It does have.
I think that tells you a lot about why Game & Wario didn't really sell.
Yeah. I mean, there's Game & Wario as a concept of doing bigger mini games. I think there's obviously ground there to play because micro games was sort of a novelty, but it isn't a WarioWare game by choice. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. One other thing I don't think we should neglect here is that the NES Remix games have filled in some of the gap
of
WarioWare. I mean, they're not the same, which is good.
I mean, they're specifically 9-volt sections, effectively.
They do scratch that itch to some extent, and I think we're definitely going to see more of those. Probably this year, we'll see the next NES Remix. I mean, they did two of them just in 2014, so I do think we'll see... new one this year, maybe the Super Nintendo one that we've talked
2013,
about.
2013, 2014. Because the first one came out at the end of 2013. And then
it was like December 31st. I mean, whatever. It was within 12 months of each other, there were two of them.
Wario is as a character, though. I mean, the Nintendo's not going to abandon using him because he's the funniest character they have. I mean, they really only have a handful of comedic characters. They have Wario and Waluigi. They have Donkey Kong, which they'll use for comedy sometimes. And they have Luigi. And that's really the... I mean, unless you want to...
Luigi's probably the funniest.
Unless you want to start going to Tingle. Like...
Yeah. Tingle's which Nintendo doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, they've used him for comedy.
Yeah.
Historically. I mean, those two Tingle DS games are both hilarious and disturbing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they will make another Wario game at some point. They will make another WarioWare game at some point. Like, you could do some interesting ideas with the gamepad and Wii remotes on... a WarioWare game. It's just, you know, having the ideas to make it. Obviously, the team making those games, like I said, they've been busy. Like I said, they made Tomodachi Life. They made, you know, they worked on Game & Wario. They did Rhythm Heaven. They worked on a previous Rhythm Heaven. They did Kiki Trick. They've done a bunch of stuff since their last WarioWare game. It's just, they've had other things going on. So they will make another one. Just give it time.
Right.
For sure. Okay, well, let's move on. And James, you've got the next letter.
I do. The next letter.
And it is a letter.
It is, yes. It is B. The next letter, Brian D. writes, "For several years, I have been unhappy with my current line of work. I frequently tell myself that I should do something to better my situation. But instead, I always find myself playing video games or surfing the net reading about games and never seem to be able to get anything done. I always tell myself that, after I beat insert latest game here, I'm going to focus on bettering my life. But then a new game comes out, and the cycle repeats itself. One very recent example would be this weekend, where my schedule plans quickly dissolved to downloading and playing Demon's Crest, not to blame the RFN crew, but heavily persuaded by your high praise, and it was very good. I have considered giving up gaming for an extended period of time until I am satisfied with the rest of my life. One option I had considered would be boxing up all... One option I considered would be boxing all my games up and storing them away, although I don't know if I could have the self-control to not just open them back up to play. Another option is selling them all completely, but I think I would really regret doing that. Have you ever found time in your life where you had to stop playing games for an extended period of time due to other priorities coming up, and how did you go about that?"
So I've got a confession. I wrote this under a pseudonym. And I want your opinions.
I would suggest that you just go play more Persona Q. Maybe you'll finish the next 100 hours.
My confession maybe. Is I stopped playing video games 6 years ago.
That's believable. Believable.
It is.
John actually did.
Yeah, seriously. Like, I've been... the current job that I'm in is the job that I got when I got out of university. And I've been there for like 10 years. And it's kind of a recurring joke with, my friends and everyone I know. Like, every time, like... The company has gone through some tough times, and every time, like, I'm gonna get another job, like, I'm gonna find some other place, and I still haven't updated my resume. And I think that video games are partly to blame, but I think that they're really, like, the real reason why I haven't worked towards bettering my life, as Brian puts it, is less to do with the video games themselves and just the fact that I'm just too damn exhausted and I just don't want to have to think about it.
It's complacency.
Like on weekends. There's that, but there's also just when I do have free time, I don't want to spend it that way.
If things were bad enough, you would want to spend it that way. That's what it comes down to. Like you're like, okay, it's... I can get, like, so I mean, I've gone through stretches in my career and in my personal life where it's like, all right, I'll just get through this nonsense. I don't have to deal with this crap anymore. And that's sort of like, you tell yourself, like, hey, this is going to turn into like therapy session over here, but tell yourself, like, all right, this is a one off. It's never going to be this bad again. And if you're in a line of work where you're telling yourself that all the time, thankfully I'm not, but if you're in a line of work where that's all you're telling yourself, it's always going to be like that. Like, it's gonna happen. And
yeah, it either is like that or it's not like that.
Yeah, it can happen on one-offs. Really is. Like, one-offs, okay, fine. But if it's like that all the time, then, yeah, you need to do something about it. And if video games are really what's stopping you from doing something about it, you need to find some way to deal with it. And I don't want to throw the addiction word out there because that's not the right word. But there is sort of this... I guess it's kind of a salving factor of going back to these things while things are shitty elsewhere. And
people always talk about video games as an escape, but at what point are you spending more time escaping than you are actually like dealing with
escaping,
shit?
Like actually escaping, like getting away from it.
Like you can have, you could definitely have too much of a good thing. And I think if you're spending your entire weekend playing games, that's not good. I mean, I don't spend my entire... You know, there are times when I feel like I didn't really do much of anything except play games. But in reality, I was doing laundry. I was doing dishes. I went out for a bike ride. I called, you know, I went and saw some friends maybe. I got up and I made breakfast for myself. I mean, it's not like I was like, up for 48 hours playing one thing the whole time.
I've done that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, those things are things that you need to do. I mean, some people don't do them. They don't take care of themselves.
I've also not done that.
Yeah, that's an extreme. But when, like, doing the dishes, like, that takes a long time and everything. And then if you spend all the remaining time, that's the thing. Like, who has enough time to... I don't know. Like, there's not enough time in a week.
See, I'm not getting the read here that he's literally he comes home Friday night, turns on his Wii U, but there's no games. He turns on his system with video games on it and then plays for 70 straight hours till he goes to work on Monday. I'm thinking it's just like he's got downtime as opposed to going and finding something else to do with his life. He sort of retreats to either video games or browsing the internet He spends it doing normal leisure time activities. I think video games is just the one I'll speak directly to him right now, as opposed to this theorizing amongst ourselves with our doing deep psychological evaluation. Brian, I think it's not about video games explicitly. I think if you didn't have video games there, you'd be watching TV or you'd be browsing, looking at other stuff.
Right.
I think you'd find something else. I mean, video games might be the easiest for you in particular to jump into, but I bet if you did put them all in a box like you're talking about, then you would find some other way, some other excuse to not deal with this.
I think so too.
The real problem here is you hate your job. Right?
Here's what I would recommend, and I went through this, is... You literally schedule time you know, maybe you don't have to spend a ton of time on it. You know, say, all right, on Wednesday, I'm going to set aside 1 hour after I get home, and I'm going to work on something to get a new job. Maybe reading, you know, maybe say, by the end of the night Wednesday, I want to have updated my resume. Mm-hmm. And
you could still play games that night.
Right. But
just play them less than you did the other nights.
What you do to make sure you actually do it, and that's the hard part, is actually telling yourself, I have to do this, is you have somebody you trust hold you accountable to it. Mm. Like, you have somebody, a friend, a girlfriend, you know, whatever, like straight up, just you tell them, like, hey, I need you on Thursday to kick my ass if I haven't done this. And, you know, and talk about it with them after you do it. And then maybe updating your resume, there's not much to talk about. But maybe you say, on Thursday, I want to look at, you know, job listings. I want to identify 3 jobs that I'm interested in researching more on. And then on the next day, or whenever you get to talk to that friend, when they're checking on you to make sure you actually did this shit, like, you talk about the ones you've got. Because sometimes talking about it with somebody, getting involved, maybe it's a parent or an older sibling that's, you know, been through some of this stuff, will get you more engaged in it mentally too. And then,
or maybe you could invite someone over to help you do it. Say, yeah, hey, I'll order the pizza, and then we'll play a game after together. But first, I need you to come over and essentially help me with my homework. Whatever it is, right, that you need to do to try to make your life better. In this case, it sounds like you need to work on your, you know, work on your resume, or work on some job training, or just look for a new job. I mean, that alone is like a huge hassle.
Oh, it's a pain in the butt.
And it takes a lot of time, and it's very hard to get started. And it's like the most mind-numbing, awful shit, existential, you know, that you don't want to deal with. So having someone help you with that directly is a big deal.
So I don't know. Brian obviously didn't give us his life story, but, you know, if you graduated from a university, they'll still help you even though you've already graduated at, like, the career center. They'll like help you find leads. Like, at least a lot of universities do. I know mine does.
Right. But cool. he's not even at the point where he's looking for leads. I think we really touched on it earlier. Like, it's a procrastination problem.
Yeah, and, well, but if you go there and you engage with these people, you can't procrastinate anymore. You're in their room. Like, video games aren't there. There's now a barrier to you just doing something else. And there's somebody engaged who's going to try to get you engaged too.
But I think one of the problems here too, though, is the fact that he's really not defining exactly what he means by bettering his life.
Right. I mean, it could be anything.
There's nothing there. I just want to better my life. What does that mean? Like, I actually sit down and analyze what that means to you, not to anybody else, to you.
So for me, you know, starting back in August, I had to start taking care of myself better. And that meant I had to force my ass to go to the gym many times a week, eat better. And that's how I needed to better my life. And it's finally kind of turned around where it's like, okay, I actually kind of get into doing this now, but it's miserable. I mean, but I had to do it. And I had
also, it took over 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. But the feedback is, you know, you start to see progress. And even if it's finding a new job, you'll start to, you know, maybe you go do interviews. Interviews can be the most dejecting experience in the world.
But it's all habit, though. That's the thing. It's like you can have habits going either way. You can have bad habits or good habits.
Once you start doing it, though, like, you know,
yeah, that's the thing.
You get better at it, like, and you start to get like, okay, this, it becomes a significantly less daunting experience to apply for a job. And the barriers are in you. You just have to get yourself doing it.
So I think video games are potentially more dangerous as a distraction than some other things that you might do with your free time.
I think the worst one is really the internet.
It's
like, he says that he goes
reading
and
is the
around.
Worst thing for you.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just like the internet
burn
can be
all
such
books.
A time sink.
Yeah, I mean,
no, seriously,
I would. That's what I would unplug from, honestly.
Right, but you need the internet. You kind of need the internet to search for a job, though.
You mean unplug from all internet that's not podcasts about Nintendo games, right?
Right. No, it depends on how you use the internet. But the point I want to make about video games is that a lot of games, maybe most games, are designed to give you some sense of accomplishment when you do things.
Yeah,
that's part of the reason that we like playing them. And if you get home from work and you know that you need to accomplish something tonight, and then you, instead of doing a lot of other things that probably should take a higher priority because they have a more direct impact on your, if you beat the game that you're playing right now, that's not really going to improve your life. It might make you feel good, but it doesn't have a material impact on your situation. And yet playing it, it may kind of fire those chemicals in your brain and make you feel like you actually achieved something in this hour. I mean, playing video games is not work. And it, right. it can feel, especially doing this podcast, I deal with this a lot, is that sometimes I'll sit down for an entire weekend and just play video games. And at the end of it, I'll think, oh, yeah, man, I've really achieved something. I've got something to talk about on the show. I'm good to go. And I have to be real with myself and say, actually, I entertained myself.
Yeah.
And that is something, but it's not much.
I mean, the only, you know? The,
it's nothing to feel super proud about, you know? I mean, it's not to say that you shouldn't do it, but it can't replace actually accomplishing the things that you know that you need to accomplish in your life. It has to be a supplement to that.
It's at least one weekend not spent contemplating the finality of life, the futility of it all. And I think that's usually enough, you know?
Well, unless you're...
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes the distraction is, you know, we've talked about how games can help you cope when something really bad is going on, you know, and you need the distraction.
I would say if you want to contemplate the futility of life, just go play Sonic Boom.
But I mean, I think that's what he's doing, is he's using games to cope with something that he doesn't like.
Well, I mean, I think, again, without us all being psychology PhDs, I mean, to an extent, I think it's just, we talk about habit. It's just getting up and having to do it, because it is whatever it is you're looking to do. Change is the most daunting thing you can encounter. Like it's. We as a species are not adapted to change. Most animals aren't, because change is danger. But it is kind of a miracle that any creature ever goes anywhere, because that's how you get killed.
Brian, if you need more tips on getting things done,
find a different podcast.
Yeah, well, actually, we're not helping. Like, we keep talking about the latest releases that gives people. You know, usually people want to go check out what we're talking about. So I know that when I want to stay away from gaming for a while, I have to avoid like gaming, discussion forums and podcasts and all of that. But
so Guillaume just vanishes for a while.
Yeah, basically. Sometimes, whatever it takes.
But there's this book called Eat That Frog by Brian Tracy, and it's tips on.
Is this a French thing?
No, actually, it's based on
Brian Tracy.
It's a good joke, but no, it's like, I don't know, it's based on a quote by some English guy, Mark Twain, maybe. Basically, like, if you've got something distasteful to do, like, let's say you have to eat a frog, you want to get it done as fast as possible, so that you don't spend, like, I don't know, a day, a week, a month torturing yourself thinking, oh shit, I'm gonna have to eat a frog.
And by the way,
that's where it comes from.
Book, that book is available on Audible too. So what you can do, if you can listen to stuff at work, you can plan to get out of work by listening to stuff while you're at work.
Yeah, just don't put off reading it, because then you're really screwed.
Yeah. I want to go back to something John mentioned. I think this is really important, because John, you said that you're using video games as a way to cope with something that you don't like about your life, right? Or something that you're unhappy about.
Yep.
And I think games can be healthy in that way, and that they can help you cope, but they alone won't really change anything.
Yeah,
right?
it's like comfort food. It'll make you happy for a minute, but it's not solving the long-term problem. And I think that eats away at you more than anything.
Yeah,
because like, you know,
to me,
that
they're part of a balanced approach, right? Because
they're part of a balanced breakfast.
Playing games can help you calm down from your stress or your anxiety about your situation. And that can be good, but then you also, in addition to playing the games, you also have to do something proactive and constructive to change that situation. And you can do that a lot of different ways. You can structure like a reward mechanism. Well, if I work on whatever I need to work on for this certain amount of time, then I can play games for this certain amount of time after that. You know, just like dessert after you finish your homework or something like that. There's a lot of ways you can, you know, just I think there's some wisdom in applying parenting techniques to yourself. That sounds really lame, but if you think about the way parents get their children to do things, they're trying to teach you discipline. And I think as adults, a lot of times we want to get so far away from that, all that oppressive structure when we're kids, that adults foist upon us, that we sometimes kind of lose sight of the fact that we're supposed to be trained to eventually do these things for ourselves, you know, the things that our parents used to do for us, including applying discipline, including, you know, giving our lives some structure so that we have fun and we get to play, but we also get our shit taken care of, you know, mm-hmm. And we also make advancements towards whatever our next big goal is.
Well, and to that point, what you also can't do is if you have a day where you need to get shit done and you don't and you end up doing something else, don't kill yourself over it. Like, don't, because a lot of times when you do something like that, you can find yourself just digging the hole deeper. Like, right. Like the emotional toll of just beating yourself up over, you know, failing to do that one thing. Like,
just recognize it and pivot.
Yeah. Like, don't
continue to do it.
It's okay to just veg out one weekend. That's totally cool.
Yeah. I do it every now and then.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just make sure you're not doing it every weekend. Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know,
But I have to record a segment with John every weekend. That ruins everything.
I mean, changing your life too. I mean, you have to take it in small steps. I mean, you can't just say, "Well, I have to quit playing games and I have to go change my life." That's not even realistic. It's not going to happen.
It's a recipe for failure.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, and then the thing is, that's worth, you know, that you will fail if you make some huge goal. You will probably fail because you can't achieve a huge goal. You have to do it step by step. So you have to actually get a plan together and say, "Okay, well, today I'm going to do this. I'm going to look and see. Maybe it makes no sense for me to get out of my current line of work, even though I don't like it. Maybe I could just get a better job in that current line of work."
Right.
And then on the side, do something else.
Maybe this company just sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to. This is why having another person not just gives you accountability, but it gives you a sounding board. Because if you have somebody you really trust on this issue, you can sit there and go, "I hate my job." They probably already know that. I mean, they probably know you hate your job.
Yeah.
Even if you haven't told them, they're probably aware.
Yep.
And, you know, just talk about what you don't like about it. Talk about what you don't like about life in general. And then ask them, like, "Hey, what do you think I can fix?" You may have ideas of your own. You should. If you don't have ideas of your own, get some. But I think the perspective of having another person talk to you about it, people can be a little bit more flippant with, you know, like, the ease of doing something. Like, they might go, like, "Yeah, just quit that shit. Yo, what are you doing?" But, like, having that person there, you may get perspective you can't get from your own. And they may be able to tell you, hey, dude, you need to do this and this before you have any hope of getting to here. And, you know, say your ideas, ask them what they think, ask them if it sounds achievable. I mean, ask for real critical feedback, because that's what's going to give you those piecewise steps that you may be glossing over. It is infinitely achievable. I would assume if listening to this show, you're younger than John. So it is while you're younger than
it's
John.
Too late for John.
While you're younger than John, it is infinitely achievable that you can change your life. Like it doesn't matter what you went to school for. You could still do stuff, and you just have to identify where your interests are, what you need to do to get to a place that makes you happy. And that may take some time. That may mean you're gonna have to keep working this crappy job. You may be able to, like John said, you may be able to find a job that leverages the skill set you have now. That's in a place that's less crappy. I mean, it depends on where you are in your life, what you're doing. And, you know, you just have to kind of work that into the plan. Where am I now? What do I need? Where do I want to be? And what am I missing to get there? Because if you had everything you need now, you'd probably already be there.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, just make sure you're doing something every day to work towards that goal. Because at the end of the day, you can say, "Well, I did this at least," you know?
Right. Mm. If it's literally,
I want to give the last word on this topic, because we need to move on. But I want to give the last word to my friend Taylor, who always says, "Everything in moderation, including moderation." All right. John, can you read the final email this week, please?
Sure,
I think we should do email in moderation. I have to listen to John, if that's okay.
Kenobob says, hello, I have spent the majority of my adult life ridiculing one of my best friends about Dynasty Warriors. He has always tried to get me to play them, and I've always refused because I thought I knew enough about them and that I had seen enough to know without question that I do not like them. Being a huge Zelda fan, I thought I would entertain the idea of playing Hyrule Warriors when it launched, and of course my buddy was excited to see me try it, and I just kept telling him, "This game is going to be garbage, but you know, Zelda." Fast forward to today, and I am 150 hours into this quote-unquote game. Of course,
being quote-unquote game.
Of course, being in the Nile, I'd like to pin this on the fact that I'm a big enough Zelda fan that I can just look past the horrible Dynasty Warriors stench, but I'm coming to face the fact that I may actually like this gameplay style. What does this mean? I'm confused and I don't know who I am anymore. what even is a good game anymore? Could it be that I actually like Musou games? I thought I had good taste in games, but I don't know what to believe anymore. Maybe James is right about Final Fantasy Mystic Quest. Please send help.
I think I'm the one who likes Mystic Quest.
Mystic Quest is bad. I know I'm right about Mystic Quest. Yes, it's a bad game.
Yeah, you don't lie. I'm the one who likes Mystic Quest. Kinda. I mean, I think it's okay.
Here's the thing. Dynasty Warriors is the junk food of video games. People are like, oh, it's junk food. Junk food is delicious. That's why people eat a ton of it. It's just, you know, it's not good for you. You know, it's not the most fulfilling experience you will have eating food, but it's still good. Fried chicken is delicious. That's just reality.
Hell yeah, it is.
Is it
like the most, like, you know, like, do you really feel like, wow, I just had a truly amazing meal after you did? No. But you know what? You just had freaking fried chicken. It was great. Live with it. But that's what Dynasty Warriors is. It's not the most fulfilling experience. It's not the most enriching or healthy or whatever. But there's just something about it that's just like, this is catharsis. This is dumb, ridiculous fun. And I would say that, you know, that each series has its limits on that one. And how much you're willing to play it. Those games sell a trillion copies in Japan for a reason. Like, there's just something about them that people enjoy. And I would suggest if you find this kind of gameplay even remotely enjoyable and you want to experience more of it and you want to see if it's just because it's Zelda or if it's because you actually kind of maybe like these kinds of games.
Here we go.
Hold on. I would say avoid the mainline Dynasty Warrior games because they're very dry. They're a little bit more technical than some of their peers.
Still over the top though.
They're over the top, but I mean, like, they're not silly or ridiculous, except in that they're just dumb. Like, they're not deliberately trying to be dumb. They just are as a matter of course. I would say go for one that's got kind of entertainment value sort of baked in beyond just the gameplay. And even if you find
Fist of the North Star 2, Ken's Rage.
Well, that one's garbage, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, that's where my distaste of Musou games come from, because it was garbage.
Fist of the North Star 2, Ken's Rage is hilarious because this is a dude who can make your head explode by touching you in the right way, but you have to punch enemies like 75,000 times. It's ridiculous. It failed at representing the franchise that it is, and that's one thing that the Zelda game actually really succeeds at. It feels like a Zelda game in some ways. Like, the characters feel like you would expect them to feel in a Zelda series. What I would recommend instead, if you have a PS3, you can get an HD version of this game, is to get, like, Sengoku Basara. It's stupid.
It's also on Wii.
It is on Wii, but the PS3 version looks significantly better. And the draw distance works better, and the frame rate holds up a little bit better. It is a more functional game. But
again, that's Sengoku Basara.
That series is it deliberately stupid, and I find that the gameplay, it's a little bit less technical than some of the Dynasty Warrior games, but it's more fun, and there's a million characters, and they're all just dumb, colorful morons. So there's something there that can keep you going if you find that the gameplay, maybe it was just the fact that it's Zelda, but A, you can get that game dirt cheap, and B, like I said, it's a little bit easier to get into because there is more going on than just Dynasty Warriors. Now, unless you wanted to play Dynasty Warriors Gundam, there's like 75,000 of those. Knock yourself out. Like, if you love Gundam games.
They're all Japan only. But
no, they're not. No, so those games came out here.
The Gundam ones?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, three of them did.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, like, people who love Hyrule Warriors really love it. Like, I can't believe it. Some people on Twitter are just going nuts every DLC release.
I'm not a huge fan of those games. Like, I've played a few of them, you know. I played the first big Dynasty Warriors release, which I think was 2. I think 2 was the first one that really connected in the West. I can't remember what that GameCube one was. Mystic Heroes?
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that one. I think I played it at E3, and then I never touched it after that, but some people really loved it.
Yeah, it's charming. I don't think it's as good as, it's not as polished as a mainline Dynasty Warriors game. I played Sengoku Basara. I've played this game, and, you know, there's...
What about Ani Chanbara? Is that kind
Ani
of
Chanbara?
A Musou?
Samurai Bikini Warriors?
Vampire Ninja Girls or something.
It's Zombie Bikini Roundup or something ridiculous like that. Yeah, I mean, yes, but you're pushing into kind of a
That's more of like a room by room brawler versus a big map style kill all enemies brawler. I mean, ultimately the difference is mostly of format of gameplay structure, but as opposed to the gameplay itself. I mean, there is just something like I probably dumped 30 hours into Sengoku Basara because there's just something delightfully stupid about seeing these characters. So I would honestly, if you play that game and you feel like this isn't working for me, then no, you just like that game because it was Zelda, and that's cool. It's totally cool to like that game for being Zelda. I like that game more because it's Zelda than there's any possible hope of me liking that game otherwise. Right. But if you find, okay, this is kind of fun to play still, and you know, you're like, all right, I need to grind so I can unlock this last character. You're not doing it because you really want to see that last character. That last character in that game is a jackass. You're just doing it because you enjoy the gameplay style, and that's cool too. Like, it's okay to have your junk food series. Like, every person on this podcast is a junk food video game series they like. These guys like Metroid Prime, for example. So, I mean,
I think the real lesson here is to not laugh at series, at people who love games that you haven't played yourself, because then turn out to be a little bit stupid.
You should be less judgmental.
If somebody tells you they like Sonic Boom, then yeah, there's a problem with that person. There just is. There's a problem.
I probably would have bitten on Hyrule Warriors if I had more love for the Zelda series, but also if the game wasn't like $70 here in Canada right now.
Ooh.
If only for the co-op aspect. I would love to play a long meaty game that's also co-op. But
For me, it has none of the things I love about Zelda, and it focuses on the things that I just kind of don't care about in Zelda, which is like all the characters. Yeah. I just don't give a shit about that. I play Zelda for puzzles and for exploring a world.
Who
and
the fuck is Agata?
Not about those things.
Yeah, I've never played any of these games. I've never played any of this series of games. No, I mean any of the Musou games ever. I've never played any of them, and I could care less about them. Just I look at them, and to me, I could see their appeal. Kind of like, you know, like, I mean, like I would enjoy playing through like Diablo, where Diablo is just basically killing mindless hordes of stuff, and it's seeing how much you can smash it. But I get tired of it, you know,
click or button mashy or whatever. Yep. You know, it's just kind of blasting through hordes of easy enemies.
And to me, that's kind of why. For a Musou game to click, it's got to be doing something else. Like, it's got to be something silly, like I'm running around in a pants, like in a full pantsuit.
Yeah, which is why I can completely see the appeal.
With like
a bunch of
pistols shooting a bunch of samurai. Like, it's so dumb in a lot of ways. It's like, well, whatever. Oh, my superpower is she pulls out a bazooka and blows them up. Yeah, okay, sure. I'm here. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. Like, there's something there beyond just the repetition, but to an extent, the repetition is catharsis, and it's mindless. You can just turn your brain off. What I've heard a lot of people who really, 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 really are into Hyrule Warriors is that adventure mode. Like, I barely touched it, and people are like, oh my god, I finished it. It took me 130 hours. I'm like, what? And I guess it just gets...
You could have played Xenoblade.
I guess it just gets, really insane later, and, like, I respect that they went and did that. Like, that's cool. That adventure mode, like, structurally seems like a cool idea. But I've never seen anything like that in a Musou game. So if that's what you're really, really into and it's not just the gameplay, then you might not find that again. But like I said, play something if you want to play another game that's like that if you want to see if your taste in games has gone sideways.
Well, you know, there's for PS4 in Japan only so far, there's a Dragon Quest.
There is.
Warriors
it is coming out in the West.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it will.
They've announced it. It is. But it's sold really well in Japan for a PS4 game, which isn't saying a hell of a lot. But, I mean, yeah, it is. It's kind of the same idea. We're going to wrap. I just don't know what the Dragon Quest characters really have the personality. It's more just like the art style at that point.
Yeah, I think it's more the art style. And that is, I mean, that's a big part of the appeal of Dragon Quest, is that Akira Toriyama art style.
Yeah.
So applying that coat of paint to Hyrule Warriors is, for a lot of people, that's going to be enough. Because if it really looks amazing. If they made like a Ni No Kuni Hyrule Warriors, I might play it just because, like, damn, these graphics, son.
Yeah, but then you have to deal with Ni No Kuni characters.
That might be all I care about.
Yeah, but you have to deal with those characters, and that might be too much. It's too much for me.
Mr. Drippy.
All right. He's the only good character in that game. Yes, Mr. Drippy.
But he is one of the best characters of all time. So that goes for something. So we're going to have to wrap up this episode. Thank you everyone who wrote in and everyone who is still waiting for their question to be answered. We will try to get to it next time. And again, the address for your emails is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And if you forget that, just remember, there's always a link in the article on our website at NWR. So you can always find it there if you want to send us an email. Next week, I expect that we'll probably have some coverage of Codename Steam and even Outrun 3D or 3D Outrun that just came out. So look forward to that. We'll have a lot more stuff to talk about, and we'll really look forward to it. So thank you, James. Thank you, John. Thank you, Guillaume. Have a great weekend, guys.
Thank you, Johnny. It's been a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Everybody, enjoy your week.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Play video games, but not too much. Not too
much. You know what? No. Go buy Hyrule Warriors.
12 hours a day.
Even if you already have Hyrule Warriors, go buy it.
Regiment.
Alternate between that and Persona Q.
Just half hour breaks every four hours.
Don't alternate. Play them at the same time. You have two hands, play two games.
Yep.
Poop socket. Get on it. Go hard.
There you go. Bye.
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 Hyrule Persona Warriors Q Plus New 3D Edition.
Mystery.
Dungeon
Plus.